Welcome to The Sale Ring, a podcast dedicated to real estate brokers, agents, and America's top auctioneers that keep the markets moving. Join your hosts, Sean and Trina, as they talk with most successful realtors, marketing and technology experts, investors, and influencers. Welcome to The Sale Ring.
Says welcome to the sale ring.
Yeah, I still like that one way better than the last one.
The bell.
Yeah. Ting. The one that took us 10 years to change.
We had
the 5-minute intro time we had before this one.
So there's a bell in there. Greg is, we'll introduce Greg in a minute. He's in the studio with us. There's a bell in there and somehow, I don't remember, we had it shortened, the intro shortened a little bit and it came back and it was like,
ring. It sounds like a triangle.
Like a triangle. Yeah. And it used to sound like a boxing bell. And it was like, okay, that sounds kind of cool, you know, but.
I mean, we're called the sale ring. It should ring, I think, but that's okay. I like it. I still like it that it's shorter.
Yeah. Yeah. So we, it's tax season. April is tax season. And this is a great time to stay on topic of tax and more importantly, tax deferment. I don't want to pay taxes.
Yeah, nobody does.
Nobody likes that. Actually, I heard Mark Cuban the other day say, I love to pay taxes. I love doing my share. Here's my $246 million in taxes or whatever. It's like, you arrogant son of a gun, you. And you don't like it. I don't care what you say. Okay, that's just not factual.
Somebody in the government paid him to say that.
That's
he
exactly
got paid
right.
Tax-free to say that.
That is exactly right. He's getting paid to say that.
Yes. But
on the topic of taxes, today we're going to talk about 1031 exchanges and a lot of tax deferment strategies out here. We have a subject matter expert with us from Asset Preservation. We got our good friend Greg Shoey in the studio. Greg, how are you?
I'm doing awesome. Thank you, Sean. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Trina. It's an honor to be here and to be in front of your audience today. So thanks.
Yeah, well, we feel honored. You know, we've known each other for quite a while.
We have.
We've known each other for several years through United Country and through, you know, just being in the industry together here in the great state of Missouri. I know that you operate in multiple states. We'll talk about that. I think, first off, the listeners would like to know a little bit about who is Greg Shoey, who is Asset Preservation?
Absolutely. So my name is Greg Shoey. I was born and raised on a family farm in East Central Missouri. Moved into the city, spent a little time in the military, got out of the military, and for the last 20 years, I've spent a majority of my time in the real estate and also the last 19 years in the 1031 exchange space. So I've been kind of in the space on the real estate side and the 1031 exchange side for a number of years now. So, yeah, that's Sean. That's how we got introduced and that's how we put it all together. So I spend a lot of my time in Missouri and Illinois, and not only that, but the Midwest, talking to investors, real estate professionals, real estate referral partners, other partners, CPAs, financial advisors, about this topic with 1031. I do presentations. I do continuing education. My main role is to source 1031 deals, and my other main role is to educate individuals and those that want to learn more about Section 1031, which you talked about, the tax deferral side. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. So
yeah. Well, we welcome your expertise. Again, it's tax season. People have heard of 1031 exchange, but maybe they're not quite sure exactly what that is. So let's just start at the grassroots level and say, what is a 1031 exchange? And then we'll work from there from the bottom up.
Absolutely. So one of the most common questions that I do receive is exactly what you said. What is a 1031 exchange? And what I've done through the years is I've actually taken a little bit of the tax code and I've taken a little bit of the objections that I get from people that ask the questions or the conversations, and I've come up with this, call it 30-second infomercial elevator speech, so you will. So here's what when people ask me what a 1031 exchange is, this is what I tell them. I tell them that it is an IRS-approved program that allows an owner of real property to defer up to 100% of their capital gain tax on property held for productive use in a trade, business, or for an investment as long as the exchange into property held for productive use in a trade, business, or for investment. That's my definition. And like I said, I sprinkled a little bit of the tax code in there, and I'd like to break that out a little bit and kind of give you reasons why I put this together. So the first part is it's an IRS approved program. You know, we were talking earlier about taxes, mm-hmm. you know, and even recently I've had conversations with individuals that have said, I'm not really sure I understand the concept, because isn't it the job of the IRS and the tax code to pay taxes? If this section 1031 of the tax code is allowing me, or it says that I can defer capital gain taxes, is that even, like, I've literally had
legal,
people,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like literally people have told yeah. me, is that legit? Like, yeah. is it, I'm like, no, I didn't make this up.
Yeah.
Right. Section 1031 has been around.
That's not your code that you just made up. The Greg Showy 1031.
The Show Me 1031 code. I didn't do that. So it's been around since the 1920s. So this is the tax. I mean, this is what I tell them. If it's there for you to take advantage of it, why not take advantage of it? Why Absolutely. Not learn about it and do it? Because I think, there's probably a few other things. I don't know the entire tax code, but there's not a lot of programs out there that can allow you to defer
100%
yeah. or up to 100% of capital gain taxes, because really that's what it boils down to. I mean, people work hard to build a real estate portfolio or build an investment portfolio around real estate. And at the end of the day, they're like, I don't want to pay taxes. And this is a good tool for them. So it's an IRS approved program. The other thing that I like to tell people is it's a process. Like me, I'm a checklist guy, mm-hmm. right? I'm a checklist guy. It's a checklist. 1031 is the same checklist for the single family rental investor as it is for the multi-million dollar, billion dollar office building, farm and ranch, whatever you want to have investment that people have. So it's the same process. It's just educating them on that. So, you know, that's kind of the first part of it. The second part.
Let's before you move on, let's yeah. break something down real quick. So sure. we're talking about tax deferment.
Yes.
We're not talking about tax elimination.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's an important point for you to clarify for the listeners is it doesn't negate or do away with your responsibility to pay taxes. It just allows you to defer those and pay them at a later date. It's a tax strategy.
It is. You're exactly right. It is. It's a deferment. So, yeah. Yeah.
That sometimes gets lost with consumers in particular because they say, well, I want to do a 1031 exchange so I don't have to pay any taxes. And I said, well, let's clarify that real quick, because what you're doing is you're pushing the taxes. But there is an escape hatch to that also. So we were talking about on a previous show where and you correct me, you're the subject matter expert, but if I defer into a property and then I sell that property and defer into the next property and I defer that and sell into the next property and then I die,
yeah.
mm-hmm. what happens to those taxes that I deferred through 4, 5, 6 transactions out there?
Yeah, so the conversation we have at that level is, you know, right now, currently, there is a step up in basis. So if you inherit an asset, if you inherit real estate, there is a step up in basis. Because one of the things that the tax code actually says no gain or loss. So if you inherit a property or an asset at a particular level or a particular value, and you sell it at or close to that same value per 1031, there should not be any capital gain tax due, because the tax code says no gain or loss shall be recognized. Sir.
And I understand there's a loophole that, you know, I call it a loophole, but there's an opportunity right there that the government has looked at multiple times at trying to close that.
Yes, they're always looking at that.
Always looking at trying to close that. Yep. And we're talking about the difference in building personal wealth over your lifetime and mm-hmm. generational wealth.
Yes.
There are people that are still taking responsibility in this country to say, listen, this is my family and this is our tradition and this is our heritage and I'm going to build until I pass on, and we're going to have strategies out there where my successors can take that and build, and this plays right into that.
Yeah, I'll be honest. Those are some of the neatest conversations that I've been involved with is the legacy and the generational planning. You start looking at that, and that's really, I think that's just amazing.
And it's an unselfish act.
It is.
Yeah.
You're
forward thinking, because none of us are getting out of here alive, right?
It's 100%.
So how do I take care of the people that, you know, I feel, you know, I want to see that legacy continue and be responsible for. So, yeah. So, yeah. But I interrupted you, so now.
No, you're good.
Phase two.
So the other neat thing about the definition is that, you know, I talk about real property. That's actually part of the tax code. When I talk to real estate professionals and those in the real estate space, a lot of times they will say, you know, you exchange real estate. Definition says property. And I'll give some examples later on of some really neat alternatives, replacement property options that are not your typical real estate bricks and mortar kind of buildings. I know you had a young lady on your show last week that talked about one of the topics or one of the options that I'm going to talk about today, the DST market. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a lot of that. We're seeing a lot of people do that. So I'll cover that in a future question here in a few minutes. But real property is by definition what it looks like. And there are things out there that qualify that don't particularly mean or meet the real estate kind of concept. And I think that's also very, very interesting and enlightening to see when things like that happen.
Yeah, for sure. Man, I got so many thoughts going through my head right now about, you know, where it's applicable and it's needed as much now as it's ever been needed in the history of this country, because I just look at we're literally are printing money right now, and just getting more and more into debt, and they're going to start looking at other ways to cover that debt, to extract. Yeah. I mean, it's just going to get tougher and tougher. So
they're looking at it now. That's the thing. They've always been looking at any aspect in any way they can figure out how to uncover a penny.
Yeah.
There's proposals literally I get emails every week about proposals about this and that. And I mean, it's just, they're always looking.
Well, it's like cancer though. You know, there's a difference in a cursory look. Because we could probably harvest a little more money from this if we close this loop, and then putting something under a microscope.
Yeah.
Because you have dug yourself into a hole, you know. Cancer's gotten bad enough now. We have to start grasping at straws and doing everything we can. And that's where I'm fearful of strategies like this that have been beneficial for a long time and just not you know, that's a whole other topic for
another
show. But it's use it while it's here.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, take advantage of it.
Absolutely.
So some of the advantages that you see in 1031 exchanges, you know, over traditional sales, utilizing a 1031 exchange, you know, versus just an outright sale and collecting that cash. So what are some of those advantages?
Yeah, that's the big advantage. The difference between a sale is you basically sell a property and you end up taking the cash, pay the taxes that are due. On a 1031 exchange, you know, some of the things we talk about, some of the reasons that people consider a 1031, the big one, and we touched on this earlier about, you know, building that and working hard to create that wealth. The biggest one is preservation of equity. Mm-hmm. You know, instead of looking at a number or a lot of times it's a pretty substantial number that you may have to pay the IRS to, you know, capital gain tax. You can actually take those proceeds and defer that, and you can actually scale up your real estate a lot faster because you can use that money as leverage on property. You can go on the next one. And so preservation of equity, again, people work hard for what they've built. Yep. You know, instead of paying taxes, you can use that amount and exchange that and use that as leverage to go purchase. And you just basically increased your purchase power. And you can create a larger portfolio a lot faster. People scale really quick instead of paying that capital gain tax. They can use that towards down payments, or they can use that towards, you know, the new properties or properties to create that wealth.
So with any program like this, there's going to be requirements, right? Yes. So let's talk about the specific requirements to do maybe a full tax deferral or a tax exchange. You know, what's that look like?
Yeah. So again, the definition is the goal. I would love for everybody to do full tax deferral. And that's of course, 100%. But a lot of times what people do is they kind of look at the sales price on the sales side, you know, and that's typically what happens. Usually when you sell something at a certain value, you're exchanging for something an equal or greater value. But in order to qualify for full tax deferral, there's really two things, and it's a number. It's basically numbers at that point. We look at two things. We look at the net equity that is going to be left over in the sale of the property, and we also look at the debt. You know, so for full tax deferral, we have to reinvest all net equity and we have to acquire property with equal or greater debt. Now, the reason I say that is because a lot of times people have this misnomer about the debt. So, you know, if you look at the numbers and the equation part of it, you reinvest the equity, you can equal or greater debt. A lot of times people want to say, well, I want to pay down debt, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But here's the way I kind of explain it. If you have a reduction in debt on your 1031, the IRS looks at that as a benefit.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that benefit, of course, is taxable. So a lot of times for full tax deferral, reinvest in that equity and acquire property with equal or greater debt. That actually satisfies the 1031 requirement for full tax deferral. It's not necessarily I'm going to sell for $1 million. I've got to buy for $1 million or more. It's I'm selling for $1 million. I've got this much debt. I've got a cost of sale, which is part of the equation, and that's going to give me a net equity. That number, that net equity and the debt number has to be redeployed moving forward, and that qualifies for full tax deferral. So, you know, if you look at it on paper, it's basically just a simple equation with some numbers, and, you know, every number is different. Every deal is different. And that puts it a little more into perspective on what the other property would look like from a numbers,
yeah,
from a numbers perspective.
And then the nuances of, you know, I guess we could talk a little bit more in detail about like how that is transferred from one property to another, untethered or untouched. You know, And maybe it's premature. I don't want to jump ahead here, but I think it's important that, you know, the people understand that when you're closing out something, you're having some assistance in that transaction, obviously. So
yes. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that point up, Sean, because one of the things going back to part of that process, there is a checklist. And one of the things that this is absolute, I tell people this is a non-negotiable. When doing a 1031 exchange, I have two of them, but there's one. The first one is you have to, if you want to do a 1031 exchange, you have to set up what we call an exchange agreement with a qualified intermediary. That's what we are. That's what we do. Our company's been around since 1990, and we've facilitated over 200,000 of these 1031 exchanges since then. So, you know, you got to look at things like that. But I tell people the non-negotiable is before you close on the property that you want to exchange, you have to set up a exchange agreement with a qualified intermediary. And that's the role that we play. That's a non-negotiable. You have to do that before you close.
Okay.
I've had people call me, hey, I closed on Tuesday. Here it is Thursday. I want to set up a 1031. I can't help you.
Yeah.
You know, it's not me. That's the law.
Talking from outside of, you know, your expertise, but it's because they've taken ownership, control of that money. And once you do that, it's taxable income.
Yeah, it's what we call constructive receipt. Taking possession of the money or the property.
Okay.
Burdens and benefits of ownership is what we call it. Technical term. Yeah. But yeah, non-negotiable. You have to set up an exchange with us before you close.
So the key to this is, I mean, have the foresight to think about what is your strategy. If you're using a tax strategy like a 1031 exchange, contact a company like Asset Preservation, get guidance, and more importantly, stay removed from that transaction far enough that you can complete a 1031 tax exchange. I've always heard this term, like-kind exchange.
Yeah.
Yeah, is that still very relevant? I mean, a like-kind exchange, is that an applicable term?
It is, and the neat thing about like-kind is that the definition is broad. We have a very broad definition on what like-kind looks like. You know, going back to that definition, we talk about real property. You know, that's what it says in the tax code. Some of the examples that I've seen that qualify for like-kind that, again, aren't your typical bricks and mortar. I've got some really neat examples. For example, I know Sean, you're
let's do this. We'll slip away. We'll talk to our sponsors, and when we come back, Greg's going to give us some like-kind examples, and I think you're going to find this interesting. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Ever dream of owning a country estate, historic home, or lakefront property? Log on to UnitedCountry.com. Would you like to retire to a home built on breathtaking acreage in the mountains? UnitedCountry.com. Ever dream of your own private hunting preserve? UnitedCountry.com. Over 30,000 farm, recreational, and lifestyle properties are just a click away, helping people find their American dream for over 90 years. We will help you find yours. Log on now to UnitedCountry.com and find your freedom.
Thinking about selling a real estate investment, but worried about the taxes you'll have to pay? Property owners just like you have solved their tax issue with a Starker Services 1031 exchange. One call could save you a fortune in taxes. Call Starker Services today at 800-332-1031 or visit online at www.starker.com and keep the tax dollars working for you.
Are you looking for heavy equipment but unsure where to start? Then you need to check out AuctionTime.com. Buying great equipment has never been easier than bidding online at AuctionTime.com. What are you waiting for? Online auctions are closing every Wednesday, so register and start bidding today. AuctionTime.com, the way to buy heavy equipment.
Crude oil, natural gas, coal. Buying and selling minerals is a breeze when you have the right energy professionals on your team. MineralMarketing.com is a leading resource for America's mineral owners. Whether you're wanting to lease or sell your mineral rights, Mineral Marketing has you covered. MineralMarketing.com, the oil and gas marketplace.
And we're back in the studio with Greg Shoey from Asset Preservation. Greg has been educating us about the 1031 exchange process. And right before the break, we started to kind of dive into kind of properties, like examples of what like-kind properties and what may be that you can close out of and transfer into the next one. And I think, you know, in our previous conversation, you had some great examples. I think the listeners will find this interesting too, because I had believed many moons ago when I first heard about 1031 exchange, if you sold a farm, you had to reinvest that money back into a farm. If you sold an apartment complex, you had to reinvest it back into an apartment complex. I don't believe that's accurate.
That is correct, and I apologize. I was starting to get a little cadence before the break. I think, in all honesty, I think this portion of it is probably my. I get most excited about it because when I see things that aren't your typical bricks and mortar and things that qualify by definition of real property, it's so neat to see things that happen or can happen, and it enlightens people to know that there are other options out there because. You know, again, you talked about the farming community. I mean, there's people that built a farming legacy, and the next generation may not want to do that. Yeah. So what does that look like? So the definition of like kind per the tax code is basically real property. And some of the examples, and I know, Sean, you're successful in your real estate in the oil and gas side of it. You can actually exchange into and exchange out of oil and gas and mineral rights. Hmm. You know, there's a lot more to look, you know, kind of a deeper dive into, you know, what qualifies and what doesn't. But there's an opportunity for people that want to invest in oil, gas, and mineral rights, or they can actually sell if they do have, you know, oil, gas, or mineral rights, you know, put together or a program. We call it productive payments or production payments with its royalties. There's a structure that depends on the structure, but
it's investment income.
But it's investment income, and it qualifies for real property under Section 1031. So there's a lot of people, you know, in the country that are exchanging oil, gas, and mineral rights.
And to clarify that, just so I have it straight in my mind, I have an oil and gas production asset, maybe an oil well or a saltwater disposal, whatever it is. I can sell that. And that sale accumulates to a $500,000, $500,000. And I can invest that into a property that is not oil and gas property, another Correct. Investment property.
You can buy ground, you can buy an income, an apartment building. But again, you got to look at the actual, you know, the agreement, the structure of the oil and gas product, right. You know, kind of a deeper dive into it. But oil and gas and mineral rights were, you know, exchanges are still happening today. So. That's one example. The other neat thing about it, we talk about water rights. Mm-hmm. You can actually exchange water rights. You can exchange air rights. So a lot of things. And one thing to remember about some of these particular options or replacement property options is a lot of times we have to go to the state that they're located in. A lot of states, you have to look at the state law that, to see whether or not that qualifies for real property. For example, New York actually has what they call an air right that qualifies. It's called a TDR, transferable development right, or something. So you have to look at this. You got to dig a little deeper to figure it out. But you can do water rights. You can do air rights. You can also exchange easements. I know that happened a lot in the northeastern part of Kansas, northwestern part of Missouri. You know, when they put the big
wind towers.
Yeah.
You know, they put 15 or 20 wind towers on one piece of ground. And I mean, if you think about it, I mean, the rough idea is, if you've got somebody that has a 30-year plus lease, that's called a leasehold interest, that qualifies for real property. So if there's a lease out there with options that goes past 30 years, there's a good chance you could actually exchange that easement contract, and you can exchange that for more ground, or you can go buy another income producing property. Because
that's interesting. Yeah. I've never heard that before. Is the 30 year, is that kind of the cutoff longer or shorter than 30 years? Is that something that's defined?
So it shows up in the tax code as if something has a 30 year life to it, like on a lease, if it's a, you know, initial lease with the options, as long as it's at least 30 years, the IRS has recognized it as real property.
Real property.
Yeah. We have a lot of people, for example, that will exchange into a ground lease.
Yeah.
You know, with a, you know, a publicly traded company, as long as that ground lease has, you know, has a term that's equal to or greater 30 years, that qualifies under the definition of real property.
Very interesting.
Yeah. It, and like I said, it's the neatest part. I think it's the neatest part of my presentation, my topic talks, because, you know, a lot of people just think it's, you know, like you said, yeah, I sell a farm, I got to exchange into a farm. Or if I sell an office building, I got to exchange into an office building. It's, I mean, you can, the definition is really, really broad, and it's really neat to see some of the exchanges that we do and have done to see how people can take advantage of, again, the definition, you know, of the tax code. So, and the last one, I knew you had a lady in here, was on your previous show. There's actually a program out there called Delaware Statutory Trusts, which are I call them DSTs. The neat thing about DSTs is that I really think, am I just kind of looking at it, it's what I feel like probably the most, the closest you're going to get to passive income in real estate. I mean, it's fractionally owned interest. It qualifies for 1031. It's institutional type tenants. It's long-term leases. It's professionally managed. It's a neat concept to do. And a lot of times, here's kind of the scenario that I give. A lot of times the DST product is a secondary option because, again, the goal is full tax deferral. If somebody's not able to defer all of their taxes or all of their equity and debt into one or two properties, let's say they have money left over, they can actually take that extra surplus and utilize that into a DST product.
Yeah.
So again, it's the goal is 100%. So we see people that do nothing but DST investments. We also see people that will go out and exchange into one or two buildings, and maybe they have a couple hundred thousand dollars left over. They can take that money and invest that into the DST market because it qualifies for 1031, and they can accomplish the full tax deferral concept. So again, it's that old adage, you know, the shell game. You got to, you know, put the shells to use and make sure you cover them all. So,
yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your home residence. So I know that there's some nuances around deferring into a property that's going to be your primary residence.
Yeah. So one of the things you're not allowed to do is you're not allowed to exchange into a primary residence. However, there is a section of the tax code out there called Section 121, which is a primary residence exclusion, which says if you live in a property for two of the last 5 years, you can exclude up to, I believe, it's $250,000 if you're single, $500,000 if you're married, you can exclude the gain. But here's what happens. We see a lot of people, especially on the farm and ranch side, that live on, we call the homestead.
Right, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. They have a house. Let's say they have 100 acres and it's all on one parcel. Mm-hmm. You know, what we do is we look at some of the things on, you can actually take advantage of both Section 121, the primary residence exclusion, and you can take advantage of 1031. And a lot of times what they do is when they structure that particular transaction, they'll take and carve out
subdivide
the house
it out.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. some acreage. A lot of times we refer to the homestead exclusion. So certain states have certain homestead exclusions. We also look at, and I've heard the term used, customary to the area. For example, let's say you're the last 100 acres in a development that's everybody's developing around you.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say everybody else is on 3-acre or 5-acre tracts. You know, there's a couple other things that they do, but they carve out a portion of that 100 acres with the actual home, and they can sell that under Section 121. And then they take the rest of it, let's say it's 3 acres, they can take the rest of it and 1031 exchange it into income producing an investment property. So I refer to it as split treatment. You know, that happens a lot on the farm and ranch side.
Yeah.
You know, people will sell the homestead. You know, they have a house, they have a property, and let's say it's all deeded under one tract, and they can carve out the primary residence and some acreage, and they can 1031 exchange the rest. You know, because again, capital gain taxes could come into play there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So there is a workaround. There is some mm-hmm. solutions for primary residence. But again, subject matter expert, mm-hmm. employing the right company, mm-hmm. you know, having somebody come in and manage that for you is paramount in that equation. Because I'm going to assume that, you know, people still kind of like to handle their own business, and they're very close with their money, and sometimes untrusting. You know, of not that your service is bad, but it's the unknown. They're untrusting about something that they haven't used before, and they don't fully understand it. And it's a lot of money to them. You've brought up several times in this podcast that people work for a lot of years to accumulate wealth, and now I'm going to divest of that, and I'm going to ask somebody else to manage millions of dollars yes. of money that yes. my family has accumulated over 40 years, you know, and that's a big pill to swallow
for
some people.
It's a huge number, and we take pride in the fact that we treat that like every person. I mean, that's a big number to, it doesn't matter if it's a few thousand or tens of millions of dollars. It's a big number to somebody. Yeah. I mean, they worked hard for that.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
So yeah, you have to entrust and put people, you know, the right people in place to make sure. I'll give you a couple of quick examples. I tell, you know, it's funny. People ask me, you know, where I get my deals from. Well, I'll give you a recent example. We literally completed an exchange for an investor that sold a $39,000 rental.
Huh. Yeah.
You know, you talked earlier about not wanting to pay tax.
Yeah.
Their capital gain tax was just under $6,000. And the comment was, and I'm not going to repeat exactly what was said to me, but the comment was, I'm not paying Uncle Sam a dime more than I have to.
Yeah, so the bare minimum.
Instead of them paying, you know, close to $6,000 in capital gain tax, we charge a fee for our services, but then that was a lot cheaper, more beneficial, and a lot better, because here's the neat thing. They took that one rental property and exchanged it into two.
Yeah.
So now they have two.
Nice.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, now they just increased a lot of things, cash flow and equity and
diversification.
Yeah. So, and on the other side, this is take your breath away. We had a gentleman we worked on. It was about a $5 million real estate portfolio. Financial advisor, CPA, myself, the client, everybody was involved. We're on a phone call. They were deciding whether or not they should sell or do a 1031. At the end of the day, it came down to the fact that he would owe about $2.1 million in capital gain tax. On a $5 million portfolio. I was the one that asked the question of the 800-pound gorilla in the room and said,
how much cash you got?
Are you comfortable? Yeah. This is what I say to people. There's an equation. We get to a point where you say, okay, this is my capital gain liability. This is my tax liability. When I see a number, I ask the question, are you okay with writing a check to the IRS for that amount? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not my decision.
Yeah.
It's not the real estate professional's decision. It's the taxpayer's seller, decision. Mm-hmm. This gentleman, after a long, what I thought was like minutes and hours of a pause, might've been 10 or 15 seconds. He's like, you know what? I think I've decided I'm just going to pay the tax. He wrote a check for $2.1 million.
Crazy.
He sold everything and he just took the cash and put it in the bank. And he's where he's at today. But he wrote a check for $2.1 million. That was his decision.
Yeah.
You know, just everybody's different. And that's the neat thing about it. And I mean, you just have to give them the information and be the resource. But again, you know, the one person on one hand didn't want to cough up, you know, $6,000.
Yeah.
Yep. We got one person who wrote a check for 2.1. It's everybody's different. Yeah. And everybody has their pain points and everybody has their nuances.
You're listening to the Sale Ring Podcast, taking real estate and auction to the next level.
So, Greg, one of the questions I'd have is tell me some of the things that are just kind of pitfalls for people. Some things, you know, what's your checklist of things they need to understand about 1031 exchanges? You know, just some of the common misnomers out there that I guess you could clarify.
Yeah, so let's just start off with the most common, the most basic. And I mentioned it earlier in the podcast. I mean, this is a non-negotiable. It really is. One of the things that people need to realize is you need to set up a 1031 exchange before you close.
Yeah.
I like to tell people once the property goes under contract, we'll at least have a conversation to kind of know where we're going. But I've also had situations where people have called me the day before closing and said, hey, I want to do this. And you know, we as a company can accommodate that. But you know, it just, I like to be proactive with people and have that conversation as early as I can, just to make sure that we're, you know, we're uncovering everything and we all understand are on the same page. So that first one, that pitfall that people do, you have to set up a 1031 exchange. You know, I've heard stories where people just say, you know what, I just want the, I'm not going to have the money. I want the money just to sit in a title company. It's going to just going to sit there. And then I'm going to go buy a new property. It doesn't matter if it's the same day. I mean, we do a lot of what we call simultaneous closing. So we'll close the property in the morning and they'll exchange into a new property in the afternoon. You still have to set up a 1031. There is no way around it. You have to do that. Yeah. And that's people get tripped up on that. I mean, literally people have told me, well, I've got, you know, millions of dollars sitting in an account at the title company. Well, did you set up your exchange? Well, no, I didn't think I needed to. Well, that's what we call constructive receipt. It's part of what we call.
Even if you haven't physically touched the money, it's in your name and an earnest money account. It might as well be sitting in your bank account.
Might as well take it home with you. Because that's right. There's a provision out there called G6, and it covers that. G6 covers part of that is, you know, the burdens and benefits, you know, of ownership of the asset or, you know, the property. That's one. So that's one non-negotiable. Set up the exchange. You know, the other side of it is too, the other pitfall is that, you know, the two requirements for full tax deferral, again, it's equity and debt. You know, so if you reinvest all of the net equity and you acquire property with equal or greater debt, that's the requirement for full tax deferral. One thing I want to mention though, is that a lot of times, you know, the goal, we talked about the goal being 100%. Yeah. I would say, I don't have a statistic, but I would say, you know, a lot of people will do what we call a partial exchange.
Okay.
And let's say they'll call and say, Greg, you know what? I want to keep, you know, X amount of dollars out of the exchange. I'm going to take a check at closing and I'm going to go pay off some debt, or I'm going to go on vacation. My wife and kids are going to go on vacation. Yeah. It's called a partial exchange. You don't have to exchange the whole thing. A lot of people have a misnomer of that. Some people that I've talked to, they think 1031 is an all or nothing. Like I got to leave everything in the deal to get the deal done. Well, that's not true.
Yeah.
That, you know, if you want to leave some cash back, or if you want to move with less debt moving forward, it's what we call mortgage boot. Just know that when you pencil that out and look at the equation, that those kind of things, you know, are going to trigger a taxable event. You're going to make capital gains on the difference. But, you know, people still think that, you know, this is a, you know, it's an all or nothing. I've got to move all of it forward. And that's not true. I mean, I would say probably a third, if I can ballpark it, probably a third of the exchanges that we do, people will say, you know, I'm going to leave. You know, I had a gentleman last month take $300,000 at closing.
Okay.
He exchanged everything else, and he knows that he's going to pay capital gain taxes on $300,000.
Yeah.
Him and his tax advisor put that together. So, and that's the next thing I want to talk about
too. And it's okay to do that. It's still a great tax strategy when you have a significant amount of money and you say, I need access to $100,000 or $200,000 of that.
Yeah.
Just understand that that portion of the money will be taxable this year.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, but the balance of that is still getting deferred. It's still, you know, I love that because I agree 100%. When we talk to farm clients, people we're divesting or helping to divest property for, they think, nah, I don't want to do a 1031 exchange because I'm going to use a little bit of this money to do X with. You can still do that.
Yeah.
You can still do that.
And defer the balance, the bigger portion of it or any portion of it, into the next into the next investments.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Great point.
Yeah. And then another pitfall, the one that I kind of, you know, my own little, you know, non-negotiable with people is I always tell them to discuss their situation with their tax and or legal advisors because I'm not a tax person. I don't give tax advice. I can quote the tax code and I can give them resources and things that they can review and look at. But I always tell people that it's, you know, and we actually note that. I mean, did they talk to their tax advisor? Because we've had situations where I've gone through my conversation with them and I've qualified the deal and everything looks good. And it all comes back and I get an email or a phone call from the taxpayer. And they say, you know what? I talked to my tax advisor and they're telling me not to do one. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, they're the one that has to report it. They're the one that has to file it. They're the one that has to put their name on it.
Yeah.
If they're not comfortable with it or they don't want them to do it or there's something else that's out there that I don't know about because I only run in the 1031 space.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's their tax advisor that's going to give them the ultimate green light or not.
Greg, is it fair because you may be getting into just personal preferences, you know, philosophy at that point. Is it fair to ask somebody in that situation, did they give you a reason why? Did they tell you, you know, specifics? And I don't want to become, I don't want to get in between you and your tax person. But at the same token, we do this for a lot of people that are in your scenario. Did they happen to point to why it would not be a good strategy for you?
It does. And that's the other thing about not only having the experience that I have, but I have the ability to call corporate office and provide the resource. Yeah, that's a great segue into a question. Like, you know, tell me why they said that.
Well, you look at it from the other side of the coin in the business you're in, there may be some educational value in that. Yeah. That it's like, hey, I learned something. You know, I've been in the auction business for 30 years. Trust me, there are people out here at my next auction that's going to teach me something.
Sure.
Never stop being a student of life, right? Yeah. So there may be something that an accountant says, well, you know, 2 years ago on the tax bill, they did this and this. Here's why it won't work, in my opinion, for you. And I was like, had not thought of that. I'll add that to my arsenal.
That's a good point. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot more to discuss. But like I said, there's probably the top three, you know, not setting up the exchange, understanding full requirements, discuss it with your CPA. But again, it's, you know, the rules are there for a reason. You know, we follow the rules and, you know, there's ways we can kind of navigate in and around it. Again, but it's a tax deferral mechanism for people to, you know, basically, you know, build something that, you know, they worked hard on and keep going. So
asset preservation, I thought that was out of St. Louis. It that's actually nationwide. It's a very large company.
We are. We're a nationwide company. We can handle exchanges anywhere in the United States.
All 50 states.
All 50 states. Okay. An exchange in within the United States. I'm responsible for kind of the Midwest, Missouri, Illinois, kind of surrounding markets. But we have the ability to conduct exchanges anywhere in the country. And like I said, last minute exchanges, we can put that together. Doesn't matter the type of property. We've done farm ground. We've done DSTs. We've done office buildings. We've done you name it. Like I said, we've done over 200,000 of these exchanges through the life of the company. So again, it's having that resource. I have the resource to do stuff like that as well. So
Trina, there it is. There's your way you can start hiding your wealth.
Okay.
Preserve it.
Defer it.
Preserving.
Defer your wealth.
Hiding.
My wealth is being deferred enough.
Deferred. This is a tax code, so there's no hiding it. I'm sure there's stuff going out.
Sharpen your shovel and go to the backyard.
Exactly. Listen to what I found, guys. My wealth is being deferred so far, I don't even know about it.
Yes.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet. It's still being deferred, kicked down the road. But
keep kicking.
Greg, we're going to put in the show notes how they can get a hold of you and asset preservation. But just for the listeners while they're on here, maybe a quick rundown of how to get a hold of Greg Shoey if I have more questions.
Yeah, so I'm available. I do have a toll-free number. It's 833-252-1031. That's a toll-free number. It actually
1031.
Rings.
Yeah, that's lovely. I like that.
Catchy. Where'd that come from?
Where'd that come from? Yeah, so our corporate office is 800-282-1031.
Nice.
So we're going. Yeah, we got the 1031 wagon going.
We got a corporate man in the studio. I noticed you were looking at the wall when you cited that. Yeah, so you must call that number quite a bit.
I do. Yeah. I do. And then I do have a personal cell phone. It's my work phone. It's area code 314-651-3496.
Perfect.
Ladies and gentlemen, Greg Shoey, longtime friend of the Sail Ring podcast and of United Country. We appreciate you being in the studio with us today. Tremendous amount of insight about asset preservation and the 1031 exchange program. Reach out to him. If you have questions, we can't endorse him highly enough out here. He's just a wealth of knowledge, and we appreciate you being in the studio today. And that, I think that's going to wrap it up for this episode of The Sail Ring. Ladies and gentlemen, we will look forward to seeing you next time inside The Sail Ring.
Thank you for joining us for today's show. To access all resources and links mentioned in today's show, head over to www.thesailring.com now. We appreciate your feedback and encourage you to share the show with other industry pros like yourself. Join us next time as we meet you inside the Sail Ring.